Hey, this is Jonquez Hunter. You're listening to Roster Watch.
He is Alex Dunlap. I am the Podfather. This is Content Kings. And yesterday, Theo and Cody and I sat down and talked about prospects, talked about NFL draft rumors. Love NFL draft rumors. Now is the time. This is rumor time. End of March, early April, all the rumors are flying. And then it jumps the shark later on in April. But right now, we get some rumors that actually make a lot of sense. But before we get into that, in getting into all of the rumor talk, we did stumble upon an interesting anecdote that you told Cody about Mike Vrabel. So we're going to get into that. We're absolutely going to get into that. We're also going to talk about what the Patriots are going to do in the draft. There's a couple running backs that I love that I'm worried will destroy the dynasty value of other running backs I love. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about podcasting. We're going to give an update on our podcast network, the podcast ecosystem and the content creation of Player Profiler, our plans for this year, how things are going, what we're seeing. Same thing at Roster Watch. They're growing. They're expanding their content footprint. What are your goals there at Roster Watch? We're going to continue to talk about dynasty trade targets. That's been a theme of the week. I have 20 plus dynasty trade targets holstered. I've talked about them on multiple podcasts. I'll probably run some scenarios by you on that. So lots to talk about today. We are the Content Kings. Mike Vrabel is an alpha. We can agree.
Yeah. The alpha is alpha.
So Mike Vrabel is not. You were standing next to him at the Texas Pro Day.
Yeah, just on Tuesday. Yeah, he was at Texas Pro Day. One of, Vrabel was there. D'Amico Ryans was there as far as head coaches, general managers. We had Les Snead there from the Rams. There was Brian Gutekunst from the Green Bay Packers. There was Nick Caserio from the Texans. I'm forgetting. It was a whole bunch of dudes. Texas had, I think, 16 players working out. It was an interesting day for sure. You kind of start thinking about like, well, who are they sending the coach and the GM here to see, right? It was interesting, Matt. Before the pro day even started, I took a photo of it. But Les Snead was over there talking to the Arch Manning, who's going to be Texas quarterback this year, right? And Les Snead's already over there poking around and sniffing around talking to that guy. So
it's about goddamn time, by the way. How eager are Longhorns fans to move on from Quinn Ewers?
Oh, Matt, you just opened up a whole nuclear can of worms that we could talk for 2 hours about, dude.
It's radioactive worms?
No, it was palpable. It was palpable even last year. Of course, you're going to have your stout defenders of Quinn Ewers who say, he got him to two college football playoffs, two semifinals, right? Even despite, playing hurt and, losing time during the season and everything like that. But there would just be times where it wasn't even just this kind of mutter under your breath, this mumble get Arch in there. It was just like
Arch. Did it ever happen during a game in the stands? Was there ever a chance for Arch?
Well, I'm not sure that there was an Arch. Whenever Quinn, I'll just say this. Whenever Quinn would kind of go out in games, when he went out with the oblique and stuff like that, whenever Arch comes in, there's certainly a quite an ovation, if that makes any sense. And then the fans get they get a glimpse of like this guy. He's got this arm, you know, and he's you know, he's got a better touch on these deep balls, and fans care a lot about that. They care more about that than this out route timing stuff that Ewers is kind of still better at right now. Or, and then they see like they see him hit a deep strike, and next thing you know, he is just blazing some kind of 55-yard rushing touchdown, and you're just like, well, all right, well, you know, what do we have on our hands here? And then, you know, Quinn gets back healthy, and Sark's like, well, that's our quarterback and stuff. So it's been percolating underneath the surface here for not one but 2 years, you know. And he's been patient, and his family has said the whole time, and this comes straight from Eli and from Peyton, and of course his dad's Cooper, but those are both his uncles. What they wanted was him to learn the system. And now what they're saying is that before he goes to the NFL, they're not going to let him leave until he gets 30 starts. And they've stood by everything that they've said. Like, let's say the stuff with NIL. They told Arch whenever he got to Texas, he can't take any NIL money until he's the starter. So here's the dude, probably worth more money than anybody in college football. Just, you know, the brand of his name plus the brand of Texas, and just, you know, he's just not taking any NIL. And then you know, this year the floodgates opened up. He's got the Red Bull deal and the Uber deal and the Waymo deal and everything else, and that's on top of what he gets from the school and the collectives. And so that ship sailed. But yeah, man, to say that the fan base is excited about Arch Manning would be I don't know of anything the fan base has ever been more excited about.
I mean, they have the best recruiting classes year in, year out now. They're the new Alabama, which was Georgia for a year or two, and now it's clearly Texas, and they're not winning national championships, even though they have the most NIL money to give out. They have the most talented players in the country. They're sending the most players to the NFL. A pro day has 16 guys.
Yeah. But you said that they're the
– So, of course, like, the fans want to win a championship. Just yeah. Second round of the playoffs. Get out of here, man.
No, not the second round.
I'm with you. I am with you. Well, second – okay. The semifinals.
Right.
Okay. Whatever, man. Whatever. They need to win a championship. I'm with them. Like, I've never been more like just grunt fan than I am just imagining how I would feel if I were a big time Texas fan. I would be right there with everybody else. I'd be right there in the mud, just throwing it at the field, being like, get him out of here. Where's Arch Manning? And by the way, I don't necessarily agree with all of the praise. I mean, I understand that this has been the most well-engineered college career, manicured college career in the history of college football, the Arch Manning career, but it is contrived, and it must be nice, right? It must be nice to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars as a family, that you can just insist that the best prospect doesn't take the NIL money. Like, must be nice to be in that position and take the high road. Go out of your way to take a road that's higher than any road that's ever been paved in the history of college sports. That's how high of a road we're going to take.
Oh, it's even higher than
that. It's a high road. You can construct that highway above everybody else because you already have hundreds of millions of dollars and you don't need the NIL money. Whenever I see some of these, like, oh, this person, oh, such a saint, or, oh, doing things the right way, really doing things the right way. Well, sometimes the right way is just only available to a small percentage of people in the world. And this is just one of those things where I'm at first you're like, oh wow, isn't that nice? Oh wow, isn't that great? Isn't that the right way to go? Don't you love to see this? Isn't this a breath of fresh air? And I'm like, wait a second. There's no one else can even do this the way they're again. 99.99% of families are positioned when they happen to be lucky enough to have a family member go into a college football program and to have access to millions of dollars. Must be nice to just say no.
Yeah, it will, and for and it's even like the high road's even higher than the one that you constructed because they let him do NIL stuff, but he had to give it all to the children's hospital.
Oh Jesus! What? These people. I mean, again, it's great. I mean, congratulations. Your yard looks perfect, manicured, just absolutely perfectly. But must be nice to be able to hire 17 gardeners.
Yeah, well, it's true. God, I could use 17 gardeners here at my house, or just 17 dudes filling up bags of leaves. It's gotten so bad around here. I'll get to that over the weekend. Considering I can't do it during the week, I feel like I'm doing three. It truly is, man. It's like three shows a day around here, man. So, but we're in the business of content. That's what we signed up for. No one cares about streaming. I wonder if I could put like a streaming thing on my head. I'm in one of these boxes half the day anyway. Put a streaming thing on my head and go on and bag leaves. I wonder if that could get 65 concurrent viewers somehow. Oh, I don't know.
Easily. We're content kings. Of course it can. Yeah. I love that we do this show on Fridays because I am tired. I was up until 11:30 last night editing the Sonic Truth podcast. It dropped on our feed this morning. Super proud of it. Nice send off.
No, we got to talk about that, man. We got to talk about the whole Theo thing and just the future of the pod, man. The Sonic Truth pod is like a golden sun, man. It's like a special baby that we need to make sure is nurtured and taken care of and stuff. I need to know about the future of this thing.
It's going to continue on. It is a everlasting, immortal podcast program. But I would say that Fridays, I get to sit down with you and have you complain about bagging leaves, and that just makes me happy, right? It just makes me happy. I'm doing show after show after show. I have so many shows I'm double booked or I'm accidentally missing a podcast with Alan Soslowski. Alan, we will podcast. We are going to get a podcast in, Alan. I know that I missed the podcast. I had it on my calendar. I don't know what happened. I completely spaced. We're going to make it happen. But it would have been the seventh podcast that I did this week. And knowing that, and looking at my calendar is packed, right? Meeting, 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 podcast, meeting, 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 pick up my daughter, meeting, workout, pick up my daughter again, meeting. I have an 8 p.m. meeting on Friday. I have a whole set of meetings this weekend. It's what it is. It's a decision I made when we decided to become a fantasy gaming company and a content company. I was told by many people, this is the life you're signing up for. And I said, I'm with it. I want to do it. My ambition is here. And if this is what it takes, this is what it takes. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is that drives me to do these things, to put myself in these uncomfortable situations, and to not. Because I could live an easier life. We both could, but for some reason, I crave difficulty, and I don't know exactly why that is. I know that, like I grew up on a farm. I was, it was in northern Maine, where I am mucking stalls in at night, where it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You have to understand, 4 o'clock in the afternoon in January in the state of Maine, in northern Maine, it's dark out.
It's been dark for 3 hours.
It's dark. It's dark. No, it's and wild, so you dude. Get home from school and the sun's going down. Okay. So you're walking.
There's all those grisly murders up there in the Stephen King books, man. People have seasonal affective disorder.
I think my parents have that. I think they're always cranky. Yeah. That's right. I could see it. It is a thing. I know it's a thing. So I'm walking home with the wind. Blasting in my face, 15 degrees if I'm lucky, right? And I get home and the sun's going down and then I have to muck stalls in with the bedding and everything. And then sometimes the ice in the buckets, the water buckets would freeze and you have to get like an ice pick and try to, chop that up. And anyway, didn't have the most comfortable childhood certainly was great. Like it's also a great place to growing up on a farm is a special kind of opportunity as a kid to have adventures, but it's also hard. My daughter, she lives a very comfortable life.
Oh gosh.
A very comfortable, and we live in Fairfield, Connecticut, and some of her friends refer to her.
Does she clean the leaves out of the skimmer in the pool?
She doesn't, no, listen. Her friends refer to her as their bougie friend, and these are other Fairfield kids.
Yeah.
Okay, so I look at her and I'm so shocked and impressed with some of the drive that she has and the work ethic that she has, where, you know, she'll be at a basketball game watching like the boys' basketball game, and she'll be the only one in the stands that has her trapper open, is like doing homework during the game, and all of her friends are chit-chatting and she's the only one doing homework. And I'm like, why? And I'm like, it's the fourth quarter. Can you put the trapper keeper away?
Well, like, dude,
enough
I'm not
already. How does she get to that mindset? How does she put herself in this situation where she has that level of ambition when her life is so comfortable? I am like, I think that is just very lucky. That was a very lucky dice roll that we had.
No, like, and I have a great idea. Do you think that she would be open to $8 a bag to bag live oak leaves?
She'll do it. She's got not. She'll get after it, man.
She could probably make like I'm think it's like the leaves. They're only. I'm only talking on the parts of my property where it's like down to the chicken coop. So it's like just kind of the house and the yards, the pool area. I don't even care about down on the property. It's like that. The leaves can be there for all I care. You can throw them down there, but. Even last year, whenever I did this, this was a 70 bag project during this time. Live oaks lose leaves twice a year, 70 bags. She can make $8 a bag. She can make like $560.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had her out here picking weeds.
Okay. Well,
and doing great, you know, with like a little hand shovel getting in there with the, you know, getting the roots out.
Yeah.
Impressive stuff. And yeah, so yeah. I don't know where that comes from. I'm so, like I said, hashtag blessed on that. And we were very fortunate, as you mentioned, to have a person with an incredible work ethic in Theo, writing articles, producing podcasts, being super active on social media. You can't replace that, right? I am Billy Bean. I run the Oakland A's. I do not run the New York Yankees. I'm not out here competing to overpay for fantasy analysts. Must be nice, right? I don't have Manning money, right? Must be nice to be able to afford that. So we have to just hope to develop talent, and we developed Theo. I mean, Theo is Jason Giambi. He is exactly Jason. He looks like Jason Giambi. He was a prolific MVP player for us. And now he's going to another team, and because they realized how valuable he is, and we just simply don't have the capacity to afford him anymore. And so we are forced to make difficult decisions, just like we did with the Sonic Truth show. Losing Nate was a big loss, right? Losing Cody, you know, years ago, and Josh Larkey, these have all been big losses. And there's been questions all along, like, how do you come back from this? How do you rebuild and all these things? And it's like, well, we don't have to rebuild. We're just going to continue to build on the things that Theo built will stay. Like, he built press coverage. He built, you know, a lot of people bookmarking our fantasy content. And, you know, we're going to continue to deliver great, high-quality fantasy content from a number of writers, and some of them I'm in negotiations with right now. Some of my weekend meetings I mentioned, those are going to be writers. Like, as soon as I get the news from Theo, and he gave me, you know, weeks of notice, something we talked about on the Sonic Truth show that he felt very proud of. He's like, I'm going to give you a month's notice. I'm going to kill it in the month of March. I'm not going to slow down at all. That's how you know Theo's great. Is that, you know, 80%+ of people, they would coast the month of March knowing they were going somewhere else. He did not. It was his idea to do the bold prediction show this week. And I'm like, man, when he asked me to do a bold prediction show, I was like, first of all, that's a great idea. Second of all, fuck, I hate losing you, man. You can't teach that. Like, there's some things you just have to be appreciative of that the universe aligned for you, whether it's your daughter picking weeds or it's Theo doing bold predictions, which he doesn't have to do. A lot of these things he doesn't have to do. He just does them. And he helped us build this podcast network that we have. Like, he introduced most of the content creators, 32 beat writers. Like, he introduced them to me because I'm, you know, so thinly stretched. And he is so deep. Like, I'm like this thin, very shallow body of water. And he is one of these abysses where he goes, drills all the way down to the bottom of the ocean. And he knows all the best people in Dynasty, all the best people in best ball, all the best people in fantasy. And so that's how we built a network that has high stakes, best ball, Dynasty, seasonal leagues, everything all stacked up, NFL draft. So it's going to be a little bit more on my shoulders initially, and piecing it together, we're going to have to replace Theo Greminger in the aggregate, and knowing it's not going to be even back to 100%, we might find 30%, 30%, 30%, and then we get to 90%. That's the best we can do.
Do you know if we ever have to replace Trash Man, it'll, like, what is it whenever you get to the opposite of the aggregate? It's like you've hired somebody new for a lot cheaper and you get like 5X.
Well, that's like a dynasty trade where you give up all these guys, all these backups and all these stash players that are never going to break out. You give up Alec Pierce.
You free up all this space on your bench for high upside guys, and you get the one stud out of the deal.
That's right. Yeah. You're giving up Jaylen Warren. And you're getting up all these guys and you're just stacking them up, right? All these guys that are never going to break out, Jahan Dotson, all these guys, right? You're packaging them all together. Jalen Tolbert. Think about
Finally ship off like Hunter Renfro. He's been sticking around on your deep roster for the.
Antonio Gibson, all these guys, right? Noah Fant, still a chance.
Yeah, right? So sure.
You package them all up and you go out and you get Breece Hall. Like that would be the equivalent of you losing Trash Man.
it's kind of true, man. I'm just wondering what the opposite of losing Theo.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It is a bummer. Yeah. So what are all these shows that you're doing?
Trash Man does do it now, a daily show in the morning. He does one at 9 a.m. Central Time where he just does like news of the day, he just does it solo. Cody and I, now we have the Roster Watch Daily Show, and that's it usually around noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, and that's 45 minutes or an hour. It's just NFL draft or redraft, best ball, dynasty, whatever we can do. That thing's been picking up steam, man, so we're gonna keep doing it as long as people keep watching. And then of course I have the stuff I got to do for Orange Bloods, which and that's interesting. Cody and I do that too, because Cody works at Orange Bloods now too. And so we have that nightly show. And that's also about not just the Orange Bloods content, but also about dealing with the sponsors. And Cody and I got into the beef jerky game. So we're selling our beef jerky, and we're soon to have a new, some new grilling and spice line stuff that
actually
be out soon. So slinging that stuff. And yeah, man.
Whoa,
so like I said,
you have a jerky?
Yeah, four of them.
Orange jerk,
jalapeno lime, cowboy blend, hot honey, and smoked garlic.
What's the name of it?
It's from Texas Beef Traders. It's called FW. It's called Football with Friends Beef Jerky.
It's a terrible name.
Well, but that's the name of the show. It's Football
with Friends. Gross. Really? That's the name you came up with for the jerky? The jerky is more than the show. What are you're doing the beef jerky to promote your show?
Well, all right. So Football with Friends is fun as hell. That's the thing of the show. And so it's called Tasty as Hell Beef Jerky.
By
Football with Friends and Texas Beef Jerky.
Tasty as Hell by Football with Friends. That's the name.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, what is that? An acronym?
We can't,
is that,
hey,
like an
Matt,
eight
Matt,
to nine character acronym?
We cannot keep this on. We can't keep it on the shelves. So but, whether you like the name or not,
no,
it's
you're
delicious.
A good pitch man. You just, you need a little bit improved branding. Can I give you a name?
Sure.
Burnt Orange.
Oh, it's. I'm not fixing what had been broken, man. We can't keep it in stock. Like it's doing really well. So I can,
what is jerky? Jerky is essentially overcooked beef. You cook it so long that it actually lasts forever.
No, it's smoked. It's smoked.
I know it's smoked, but like it's smoked for a very long time.
Yeah, but with ours, but with ours, the cuts are a little bit different because for one, this all comes from one herd of animals where it's like they have bovine nutritionists there on staff. There's no vaccines, there's no antibiotics, there's no steroids, there's never any shots. It's all non-GMO feed. Anytime they're supplemented with the grass feed, the herd's never commingled with any other herd, and we get the jerky from the sirloin cuts. And so it's like it still has a pull, but it's a little bit kind of, you know, it's got this kind of natural sort of tallowy sort of stuff on it. And it's
but
just
isn't your audience primarily fans of the Longhorns?
Yeah. And SEC and SEC recruiting.
So the packaging should be the Texas packaging, the Texas burnt orange color pattern. And then you could just call it burnt orange. That's what I would do. But, you know, but you did something else. Give us the full 9 character name. The 9 character acronym and the
it says FWF and then it says TBT, so Football with Friends, Texas Beef Traders. Then it says across the top, tasty as hell, and it says beef jerky, and then it's got the flavor underneath it.
Okay, it's tasty as hell. I tasty as hell is not bad. Do you have a little devil? Do you have a little devil fork?
No, of course I'm not gonna have any. I'm not gonna have anything about the devil on my products. No.
But with a little flame or something? How about a little flame?
No, man. That's like saying something's tasty as hell. Like that doesn't invoke Satan.
Okay. No, tasty as hell could just be basic enough. Life is good. Life is good. Yeah. It's a great brand.
It's great.
Tasty as hell could work. Tasty as hell could work. Tasty as hell. But you don't want to embrace the hell part.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
The problem with that acronym is it's tough.
Yeah, it's fine. So we're doing that, and then but yeah, man. So like I said, I'm in these boxes talking like this, you know, at least three times a day lately, and so I can feel what you were saying earlier about your busy week of a Sonic Truth show and a Sonic Truth bowl predictions, a million different things. Yeah, see, these people say the jerky sounds delicious. The best one is the hot honey. It's just, do you know what hot honey is, Matt? It's kind of Asian, honey stuff.
All right. So just so everybody, yes, I know it's smoked. Calling it burnt orange would be ironic. And people would understand what we're talking. Anyway, we're moving on. You have a better name, and the name is authentic, which is what it's good as hell. Right. But we don't like the devil. It has nothing to do with the devil. It's just a figure of speech.
Exactly.
You should put that on there in parentheses underneath it. So if you have another set of parentheses on the packaging, you could say figuratively.
Figuratively. I would actually love that. That would be funny.
Yeah. Because listen, we don't, you know, we're a Christian family here.
And the brand that we're rolling out that I'm most excited about that is going to have the highest profit margins, that is the best product that we've made. We're going to have an announcement on that within the next couple of weeks. But that's what I'm most excited about by far.
So. You are a terrific pitch man. Think about everything. You have woven in all the best details that would sell your product, and you've teased an announcement and a launch of something new.
Yeah.
And we're just talking, but it comes so naturally to you.
Something new and something great, man. One of the best things I've ever created. So that'll be soon.
Wow. So I decided to build a fantasy football app, and then you went with beef jerky, and it's still a coin flip of which one's going to be more successful.
Because I think fast draft's going to be,
fast draft is
the ordinary draft
a little bit more regulatory. Investment in that one. So
yeah, we can ship to the lower 48 without having to ask a state to do a single thing.
Exactly. So mine's a little bit easier to scale in terms of once all the states have approved it. But in the meantime, yeah, we're very fortunate though. I mean, the Origins all rookie game. I'm looking up every time I look up, there's a new draft happening and you're in all these drafts. You're doing the turbo mode. So what you did is you just submitted your rankings and you said, I want 10 teams with these rankings. I want 10 teams with these rankings. And what it does is just automatically puts you in the draft and drafts for you, even though that you're doing a show, like you're live doing a show. Cody's watching you do a show live. He's drafting live against you, but you're not even in the draft room. And then Cody's complaining to me. This is how it comes full circle. Alex is sniping me. And I'm like, how is that even possible? Alex is, he's doing a podcast right now. Oh, it's a turbo mode order. So you're sniping Cody in anonymity. Without even being live, without even being aware of it. That's got to be a good feeling. So now that you've had a bunch of teams drafted with this turbo mode order, where is your portfolio? How many players or teams have you drafted in Origin so far? And what are your highest rostered players?
Before that, just one thing. Speaking of Cody, he just texted me. This is, I think it's of substance. So Cam Scadaboo had his private pro day today. He didn't work out at the Big 12 pro day in Dallas. And apparently Dane Brugler is saying that at his private workout, he ran a 4.65. So that gets adjusted to a 4.7, which is clearly not optimal. I don't care. I still love Scadaboo, but I was thinking he would be more of a four, kind of one of these guys that runs a 4.54, and we had just adjusted up to a 4.59, maybe right there on the precipice of a 4.6. So a little bit disappointing there.
And but you knew it was going to happen when you saw he didn't run.
What?
He didn't run at the combine, so you knew something was up.
Or at the Big 12 Pro Day. You know, and that's what Cody was saying. This dude's hiding, this dude's hiding. I'm like, dude, Scat doesn't hide from nobody, dude. He's going to be fine. And that's a little bit of a disappointing time. With that being said, I'm not sure how much I'm going to have to maybe adjust a little bit. Okay, so the Origins exposures. Let's see. Go to Origins. Or wait, I don't go to Origins. I just go to exposures.
There's a little tap the portfolio button. Right there in the bottom, there's a portfolio button.
What do you want me to read? My guys over 30% or something?
Just talk about the guys you have the most of. Like your top three guys. Who are your top three guys?
Okay, my top guy by far is Jarquez Hunter. I have Jarquez Hunter on 61.9% of these teams.
Oh, dude, if Jarquez Hunter hits, man, you're gonna be so teed up.
It's like if you just look at it though, he's like I'd have to look and see where I'm getting him in these drafts, but I don't feel like I have him in a. Let's see. I got the email from Fast Draft today. So let me just see. So Fast Draft, they'll send you your thing when you're – so I'm getting him. I got him fifth round in this one.
Yeah, fifth you're round. Probably getting him fifth round in most drafts.
Fifth round in that one. I didn't get him in that one. Didn't get him in that one. Fourth round in this one. Fifth round in this one. Fifth round in this one. So I've got him in all but one so far. Well, the ones I don't get him, I seem to get Marcus Yarns, who – from Delaware, who I have very high exposure, maybe a little bit higher exposure to than I'm comfortable with here at 57.1% here with these sixth round picks. And the other sixth round pick that I've leaned heavily into here is Tyler Shuck, the quarterback from Louisville.
Oh,
I think he's going to get drafted to a team that is going to you know, that one of these quarterback purgatory teams that might have to play him, and he's one of these guys who's at this point, I think, you know, semi ready to go, more ready to go than a Quinn Ewers, a Will Howard, any of these types. And I feel like he's going to fall to a spot where he could fall to an advantageous spot. And if I can get a quarterback that gets to play in like 6 or 7 games and gets me, you know, 17 points a game in those spots, I just feel like on the whole, that's better than a wide receiver or running back I can take that definitely has the downside to get me. I mean, we're talking about, this is only rookies, right? By the time I get here to this spot, we could be looking at guys who are legitimately getting me 3.9 fantasy points per game on the whole season if they don't go to the right spot, or, you know what I mean? So I like Shuck there, but he's got basically the same exposure that RJ Harvey has. I have RJ Harvey in almost 50% of these drafts.
You have 50% RJ Harvey? That's who I believe Cody was mad about.
Okay. Well, I mean, Cody should be mad about RJ Harvey. He's got the biggest quads of anybody that I've seen on the whole circuit this year. He ran a 4.40 at the combine. If you look at just, there's so much to really like whenever it comes to him. And it's not just, I did fall in love with the way that he just looks physically, right? But the only concerning, the only concerning thing on his profile is the fact that he didn't break out until his redshirt senior season, which is always worrisome. And he also is going to be 24 whenever he enters the league this year. He actually already is 24 years old. He'll be 25 by the Super Bowl next year. But I think at 5'8", 205, he reminds me a ton of – he's got some Devontae Freeman to him. A little bit of a smaller J.K. Dobbins to him, but I had no idea he was going to run a 4.40 because he's one of these guys that even at 205, being only 5'8", really good BMI, can run between the tackles, but, you know, can certainly make guys miss, right? But you add to the fact that once he gets into the open field, he's like he's not just a dude that can churn out yards, right? Churn out tough yards, a little bit undersized, but, you know, small through the hole, churns out tough yards, incredible leg drive, all that stuff. And when you think about that type of stuff, I know you, Matt, you're thinking that's a between the tackles grinder. I don't want that. But
RJ Harvey? No, he's explosive.
He's very fast.
Good night. The guy is a 128 burst score running the 4.4 flat. He reminds me of Chase Brown, but the thing is, he comes into the league a little more seasoned than Chase Brown, a little more NFL ready than Chase Brown, even. I mean, he had the two consecutive seasons of 1,400 yards and 20 catches. I mean, he's averaging 20 catches a season, even going back to his first year at UCF. And he's just getting better and better every year. This guy is just constantly improving, as opposed to Chase Brown. He had the one huge year at Illinois, and then he face-planted at the Senior Bowl. He was clearly a year away, whereas R.J. Harvey could produce this year.
And the best running back at the Senior Bowl. You know, so now, and but that doesn't, you know, that doesn't take any, that's not the reason why I have so much of him. The other guy, Jarquez Hunter, that I have so much of, for me, that just has to do with the fact that I Cody says he's got 66% of Harvey. Okay, all right. You got more Harvey than I do.
It's a competition. We need to get more, some of these people in this audience need to join Origins, get into these drafts, and see if we can knock Cody and Alex down a peg and start having someone else drafting RJ Harvey.
There's also the Jarquez Hunter thing. And just, I don't know if you have thoughts about Jarquez Hunter or kind of where you guys are on him, but he's a player that I'm very high on in this class. And, you know, he's from Auburn. He's 5'9", 204 pounds. So similar kind of body, right, to an RJ Harvey in this class. But here's the thing, man. All these running backs, we talked about it on the last show, dude. These guys run like 4.4. You know what I'm saying? They run 4.44, 4.40, all this stuff. They're dynamos, right? And I would just be on these coaches' calls with the SEC head coaches. They have them every Wednesday from like 10 to 2 p.m. And you can ask them all 16 coaches come on and they have questions. Matt, I'm not lying to you, dude. Every time one of these coaches was giving the preview of the upcoming week, whenever they had to face Auburn, everyone would say, well, we all know it starts with stopping Jarquez. You got to stop him. You know, it's like, it starts and ends with that guy. It's like, whenever I hear from every single coach in the SEC saying, that's the guy that we've circled, that's the problem, that's the issue, we got to deal with it. I mean, I take a lot into that. Then just through the, I've been very impressed with him through the whole testing process. I've loved watching him run. Like I said, I feel like he's one of the more professional runners in this class. I think that Caleb Johnson fits the professional runner type of archetype too. But, you know, I think that the draft capital for him, certainly in Dynasty, is going to he's going to be more expensive. He's certainly going much higher on Origins, right? I mean, Caleb Johnson, there's going to be a chasm between him and Jarquez Hunter.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Trading shouldn't have barriers. When Robinhood started, it was built to make trading more accessible. Now, Robinhood offers more sophisticated trading tools. Experience the future of trading on Robinhood Legend, the all-new desktop platform that harnesses intuitive design to deliver a seamless experience for traders. Free to use with a Robinhood account. Robinhood Legend is designed for how you trade, with powerful charts including custom intervals down to the tick and over 80 indicators and drawing tools. Trade all of your favorite assets including popular stocks and ETFs all in one place. Take your trading to the next level by customizing your layout in seconds and even enter and exit positions in one tap right from the chart with up to 8 charts per layout. The future of trading is fast, powerful, and precise. Experience it now on Robinhood Legend. Sign up today. Investing is risky. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, is a registered broker-dealer. Other fees may apply.
Did you say you get Jarquez Hunter in the fifth round in some drafts?
In almost every one.
So you're talking about fifth round for Jarquez Hunter. Caleb Johnson goes at the 1-2 turn.
Yeah, right, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. That's like a chasm of difference, right?
Yeah.
And look, I mean, Caleb Johnson looks like, I mean, if you walk into a room and you see these two guys, you're going to say, and you just want to pick the dude that looks the best, you're going to point at Caleb Johnson and say, well, I want that guy. He's 6'1", he weighs 220 pounds, you know, beastly monster. And you turn on the tape and you're an outside zone team, you're going to, like, Caleb Johnson is going to be a great fit for you. An incredible zone runner, great patience, presses the gap, waits for the, you know, waits for it to, waits for things to open up, man, and just a really good vision as far as outside zone and some inside zone stuff. There are people that think that Caleb Johnson is only good when the plays are blocked up for him. I don't think that that's true. I think he's just good, and he's got good blocking. But just the difference in price, and you're talking about a guy that's almost, what, one? I mean, we're talking about a 4.44 versus a 4.57. I think the way that their bodies look, they're Jarquez is just as compact. You know, he doesn't weigh as much. There's probably a little bit more of an injury risk, but, you know, the BMI is probably close to being the same. So, Hunter for me is just an excellent value. And then the other guys we can just talk about, it, like the other ones that it seems like I'm heavily exposed to the most so far are Marcus Yarns from Delaware, Bashiel Tutin from Virginia Tech. The wide receivers I'm most heavily invested in.
Well, hold on. So Tutin, okay. Tutin is, I think, it's such an obvious buy. I thought that he would pop higher and his ADP would correct more quickly on Origins, but it's taking a while. And even today, in the drafts that are happening today, you're seeing him go lower than I thought, right? So guy ran a 4.32. I mean, and what's interesting is with Jarquez Hunter is the perfect example, the quintessential sort of exemplary player of why this class is so much deeper than last year. Because what you saw last year was, you know, people taking shots on tight end in round 5 and 6 on Origins, taking shots on fringe wide receivers they just thought had a chance to maybe make a roster and get in there. Remember Brendan Rice? There were so many players that just didn't fire at all in round 5 and 6 last year. It was very top heavy, an incredible first round. We were not going to see a first round like that on Origins for years. But this year, it's all about the depth. It's not as top heavy, and it's going to be a lot more about, whereas last year it's like, hey, did you get Bucky Irving in round 3? Did you draft Tyrone Tracy? That was the key to victory last year in Origins. This year, I think it's going to be...
Who in round 3?
Bucky Irving.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the top 5 teams all had Bucky Irving, at least.
Oh, yeah.
And I just he always went in round 3. Maybe one got him in round 4, but mostly round 3. And then the thing is, though, if you were going to get Irving and Tracy, the way to do it would be to get Irving in round 3, even if it was a reach, so you could get Tracy in round 4 last year. I think this year there's going to be more picks in round 5 and 6 that really wag the dog in the Origins game.
Oh, for sure. Like we talked about last time, I said, you know, as you go through the process, I think you'll begin to agree with me more and more. That's like, there's going to be guys who are going to – Cody and I did this thing the other day where we look at that. Look at that comp for Bashiel Tutin, CJ Spiller. My comps for Tutin are let's see. We have a couple of them. These aren't all mine. Some of these are Cody's. Cody's is Justin Forsett. I kind of –
What?
I kind of see him as a I like DeAndre Washington for him. I think he's better than DeAndre Washington, but – that kind of play. Do you remember David Wilson if he would have stayed healthy?
David Wilson, sure. I think he looks to me more like Tevin Coleman.
But he's not as tall as Tevin Coleman, and he doesn't run as upright as Tevin Coleman.
Correct. Yeah, like, he's a squat version of Tevin Coleman, and a squat version of Tevin Coleman is guess who? CJ Spiller.
Yeah, but I'm gonna steal that comp from you, Matt. I'm gonna add it into my sheet here.
Sure.
Not that, I mean, you know, probably half the analysis I'll be doing with this will be, you know, they're at the draft house, so it won't be. But on my little cheat sheet here at comps, I'm going to add in CJ Spiller. I think that's a good one.
Oh, one of the phone calls, because again, we have to mix in business talk into the show. One of the phone calls I'm making today, if I have time, I got to call this place in Tampa where we're going to do axe throwing. That's going to be our team building event in Tampa. Because again, you know what happened, right? You know, I was trying to book an Airbnb in Green Bay and I mistakenly got the Airbnb in Tampa Bay.
Yes. I've heard the story. I've heard all about it. I need to hide these alerts on this thing from my, I guess my cousin might have just got engaged.
Hey, good for him. Way to go, cousin's huh? Getting engaged. You're having problems with leaves in your yard.
He got engaged at a Mod Pizza. Do you know what Mod Pizza is? Do you guys have that up there?
No.
It's like the Subway. It's like the Subway version of pizza, where you go in and like they have like a pizza, and you tell them like you put sauce and cheese on there, and then they walk down a bar and they grab the ingredient. They say like put some of those pepperonis, put some of those banana peppers.
Okay.
And they put it and they bake it and they give it to you and you make your own pizza.
Apparently, like, Connecticut has the best pizza in the world, according to various rankings.
Is New Haven in Connecticut?
Yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, everybody says that New Haven pizza is the best. What is different about it?
There's this place called Pepe's, and they opened up a second storefront in Fairfield, where I live. And it's
so
just,
how
it's
is
it? Absolutely mobbed. It's absolutely mobbed. I do have. So this actually happened. This actually happened. I swear I could get family members on the show. This happened. Okay. So I was at my buddy's house and it was a birthday party. And we were going to get Pepe's pizza. And I was like, oh, we're going to go to Pepe's. Oh man, buckle up, dude. Like, I don't know where we're going to park. This is going to be a mess. And then I remembered that I have one of those handicap placards just for emergencies.
Well, why did you have it to begin with?
Well, here's how I got it. I was at his house like a year earlier, and they were throwing out all these boxes because his wife's father had died. And the father's handicap placard was in a box. And as I was walking out the door, I looked down and I saw the handicap placard. And I was like, hey, is this trash? Is this, you guys throwing this out? They're like, oh yeah, this is all going to the trash. And I was like, okay, let me help you. And so I took the box and I helped take it right to where all the trash was being stacked up. But the one thing that didn't end up getting in the trash was the handicap placard. It happened to somehow, it was transferred. And I don't remember how exactly, but the handicap placard somehow got transferred into my back pocket. And this is a true story. I had forgotten the origin story of this handicap placard, but all I was thinking about was, oh my God, Eureka, we can go easily pick these pizzas up. There's no problem. We can park right in front. Right? So yeah. I park in front. I'm with him. He's in the car. He's in the passenger seat. I whip the placard out. I put it up. He's like, oh my God, look at that. That's so clutch. And then he's like, where'd you get that? And he read it and he saw his wife's father's name on it. He was like, what the fuck?
That's not where I saw that one going.
He's like, oh, this is God. The creepiest thing ever. I was like, listen, man, it's a long story.
Well, did you get the pizza?
Yeah, everything was great. I was like, dude, you're sworn to secrecy. If you tell your wife, like, we can't hang out anymore. If she finds out,
we can't
hang out. No way. Because it's bad enough. Like a lot of people, they do not like it. If you're using a handicap spot, if you're not handicapped, people do not. There's some people that are I don't
like it. Do you like it?
They will get very upset. So that is not something you should be. And again, it's for emergency purposes. People. It's for emergency use only. Okay. It's for emergency use only. And so it's like, imagine that sentiment, but times 100, if it's like your deceased father's placard. I was like, you can never tell her. And like, so now he and I have this secret together because there's no way he would ever tell her because, you know, we could never hang out. So it's like, did now we're of, it's like a bond that we share.
Did you get rid of the placard or do you still have it?
No, I have it. It's great.
He didn't even destroy the evidence.
It has since expired by now. It has since expired, but it doesn't matter. No one looks at that. Who do you think is looking, squinting and trying to get to, and also
The police officer's not saying they're thinking to themselves, I'm not gonna bug with them about it. They're handicapped. It's hard for them to get in there and get this thing renewed. It's like
okay. Let me just, you want to know another secret here? I found this out, and the fact that it's true I was embarrassed that I didn't know. A woman backed into me in a grocery store parking lot. Okay. And, you know, I called the police and all these things, and they came in and they said, well, we really can't write up a report on this. It's going to be between you and you got to take your own pictures and you got to do everything yourself. And I was like, why? What? He's like, this is private property. This is between you, her, and the grocery store.
Hmm.
This is not public property. This is private property. You know, the report, you can then use the report, but like it has a lot less weight. This is not a public parking spot. So yes, it's certainly a problem to have an expired anything if you're parking on a public parking spot. But most of the situations where you would use this, it's actually a private parking lot, in which case there's just like, you know, maybe a hired security guard, and they're not going to look at like, is this, what's the expiration date on this thing?
Yeah.
No one's ever going to look at that. And then I come like jogging up to my car, jump in and drive away.
Yeah, but there aren't meter maids at like HEB or Publix or Kroger or whatever, right? It's private
property, so it's actually problematic. That's why you have to drive more carefully in parking lots than you do on the street, because you actually have less recourse.
Hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah. See, you didn't know that, right?
I do. I've just been through it, man. I got my truck back from the body shop yesterday from somebody backing into me, and it was it was something where it's crazy. It's crazy, man, how people just lie. You know, he admitted right there that he backed into me, all this stuff like that. So we exchanged insurance. He's like, I'll take fault, all this. And call the insurance. They say, no, he's saying he doesn't know what you're talking about. I'm like, are you kidding me? He said, thankfully, there was a guy at the taco shack right there. He said, I saw that, man, if you need a witness. So I got his number and got it taken care of. But yeah, it's wild, man, having to deal with those situations. And I can see what you mean about it being on private property, how that could screw it up. Can I talk about the wide receivers that I have the most of?
Yeah, this is why I love this show. When you say, I could just explain, we don't get the same kind of views and download numbers to this show that other shows get, because we don't talk about as much football. And that's okay. That is okay. There is a segment of our audience that is here to get 50% football talk and 50% handicap parking and raking leaves.
Yeah.
So there's that. We understand that. We understand that. But if you do like this, so the one thing I would ask is, if you do like this show, share the podcast, like it on YouTube. If you are one of the people that's raising your hand going, actually, I do like this, then you should show your appreciation, comment on the show, on the main show on YouTube, like it, share it, all those things.
Yeah.
The receivers that you have the most ownership of, who are they?
Well, because I think it's important to remember, we've talked and talked and talked, running back heavy class, right? We're interested in running backs in this class. And I'm not sure – I've heard some of your theories about dynasty, about how these dynasty drafts should go. I think you and I are basically on the same page. It's like, give one in the first round if you want to get a wide receiver, and then just draft a bunch of running backs, with few exceptions. That's generally kind of how I am right now, but it's interesting. It's not how these exactly worked out, because I have three guys that I have 33% of after 30 drafts. So I guess I have these guys in 10 drafts each. And that is, and after that, it falls down to my next one, you guys, down to like 19%. So this is like the last group of guys who I'm heavily exposed to. And thankfully, Ashton Jeanty is one of them. I can't believe I have him in 33% of drafts. But then the other is the wide receivers are.
Well, you want to know why that is?
Why?
Because some people take Cam Ward.
Yeah, I have a Jinty Ward. Cody has it. Jinty Hampton Ward. So
well, because last year, remember we talked about Bucky Irving in the third round last year. All the top teams had Daniels. So if you're just going based on last year's builds, you would want a quarterback. It's just that the running back class is so much different than last year, and this quarterback class is so much worse. But still, just if you're just going on builds, you would try to get Ward and then a bunch of running backs. So I understand why there are teams that are doing that.
So the two wide receivers at 33% are Matthew Golden from Texas and Jack Besh from TCU. And those are two guys that I really love.
We had a tweet go viral about him.
Who? Golden?
Jack Besh.
Do you know who Jack Besh looks like? He looks like Cooper Kupp meets Puka Nacua meets Ben Skowronek meets every single Rams wide receiver ever drafted. I think he's probably gonna be a Los Angeles Ram. Let's see.
Why don't you go ahead? Roster Watch should retweet this. Retweet this. We're at 34 retweets and 270 likes and 57,000 views.
Jack Besh, dude, he was one of these guys at the, you know, obviously really fell in love with him at the Senior Bowl. But if you just look at, you know, just every, you know, everything about him, whenever it's just his route running ability, the way that he separates, the way that it just reminds me so much of what I saw of guys coming through the process. Like, I'm just like, dude, it's so crazy, man. It looks to me like a Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua type, a guy who at six, you know, whatever, he's not quite as tall as them. He's at 6'1¼", but pretty substantial at 214 pounds. He's one of these guys that's not going to blaze and run super duper duper fast, but he's just got this, like, what is his burst score and stuff like what is all that? Like, I guarantee you it's good for all this stuff with his agility and things, because he gets in and out of breaks with, you know, just crazy. And
his agility score is very good. He's best comparable on Player Profiler to Josh Palmer. But because of his size, he's 214, his athleticism score is higher than you might think. So he does have a high athleticism score. But his production was pretty bad until his final year.
Yeah. So
I mean, the breakout finder, breakout ratings are coming out in the next couple days. I don't see Jack Besh having a high breakout rating, sadly, just based on the 3 years of subproduction heading into his senior year.
But you got to remember that was it LSU.
Okay.
So it's like, he was at LSU in 2021 and 2022. So he was there with some dudes that are like the two of the
Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers.
And I think, there were others like Kyron Lacy's in the doghouse right now, but you know, he was somebody who was there too. And there, I'm trying to think, in the 2021, he would have been with that. I don't know. My brain's a little bit of mush right now, but he was behind good players there, right? He gets to TCU, gets hurt in that season in 2023. And then in 2024, it's like he's playing alongside Savion Williams, who we could have a conversation about what you think about him and what his prospects are for the league. People are all over the place saying anything from he's going to be the next DK Metcalf to he's going to be the next Laviska Shenault. But I, you know, obviously it's somebody who we had to account for there. What is, you guys have Cedric Tillman? That's interesting. I just imagine Cedric Tillman lining up though, and looking like he's like he does his best work as a wildcat quarterback, and then you have Savion Williams. You know what I mean? So it's. Savion has all kinds of issues with his route running and with is just general, you know, you get word from behind the scenes in these interviews and stuff like that, that he's not the most conceptually oriented guy when it comes to, you know, the whys of why he's running his routes like this or why he's asked to do these certain things within his offense, but just a total natural when he gets the ball in his hands. So
when I look at his production history in college, I see a player that is not going to hit in the NFL. I think that he also strikes me as the type of player that's going to have his maximum production as a rookie. Guys with this type of profile, the team typically tries to get them involved in year one and then gets discouraged and they shelve them. This is, like you said, this is the LaVisca Chenault corollary. This is a very common situation with guys like this.
Yeah. So, regardless, it's still
Cedric
another
Tillman's weapon. Probably a bad comp for him based on this. This is just an athleticism and production related comp. Because he's much better with the ball in his hands, there's probably some other comps like a LaVisca Chenault that are just more apropos. And yeah, you know, that's why we're talking about this now. You know, we can go back and look at the comps, and you know, we can tweak some things based on just what is common sense headed, because we just want to get these comps right, dialed in perfectly heading into April.
I mean, I think the most obvious comp, the first comp that we came to, and I heard Todd McShay say that this is the perfect comp, is Cordarrelle Patterson. Because how many of these wide receivers in this class who you could legit see coming into an NFL offense, their team just saying, move him to running back. You know what I mean? It's like Savion is a guy who you could legit see that happening with. And he's kind of the same, you know, around the same size.
Probably Camp, though, doesn't too tall.
Nah. But I mean, Derrick Henry, 6'3", he's pretty good at it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Alex. Picking the one guy. The exception that proves the rule. Thank you, Alex.
Well, he's the king. He's the king.
So those are your picks. I like him a lot, man.
I like him a lot.
But you're generally running back heavy.
Yeah. But and this year for sure. And this year in best ball, I have a completely different scenario as far I'm running back heavy, but this year in best ball, dude. I don't do all this work for sport, man. I don't do this for my health. I do this for the people that listen to my daily shows over on Roster Watch on the YouTube or the radio show or read the website or the people listening here. Like doing these best ball drafts now, you got to take a bunch of wide receivers early now. It's not like last year. It's not about getting you know, Ja'Marr Chase and then being able to get Saquon plus a, you know, plus the, plus the Derrick Henry, plus the whatever, the.
So the best team last year started with Ja'Marr Chase, then Saquon, then Derrick Henry, then Josh Jacobs, then Alvin Kamara.
Yeah. And then Kamara, like that was the team. It's the team I had. It was just the fifth guy that guy beat me on.
Right. You were second. Had to do, the thing is, the cool thing about Fast Draft is there's these boosters like we have for showdown slates where you can put a guy in you can double up his production or 1.5x his production. And the default is the first guy you draft slides into that double up chair. But you could get creative to get unique, and you and pretty much everyone in the top five of the Flex 4 game last year, had any of you put Saquon in your top booster, you would have won.
Oh, are you kidding?
Oh, yeah. But everybody left it because it's just defaulted. So you just take it, the team, and move on to the next team. And you don't go back and ever update your boosters. So it's a good exercise to go back and say, okay, I have 55 teams or I have 20 teams and I'm going to go in and I'm going to maybe take a few of these and I'm going to get a little bit of variance here and there and switch the boosters up a little bit, especially if you have two teams that are very similar. Like if you had multiple Ja'Marr Chase, Saquon Barkley teams, it's probably a good idea to flip the boosters on one of them.
No, that's that's right. But so for best ball this year, it's like whenever I look at it, I'm not. It's just not the it's not the same for me. I'm out of the business of you know. Last year, I wanted, like, if I could get Ja'Marr Chase, I was going to get Ja'Marr Chase. But if not, I wanted, you know, Saquon. I wanted Derrick Henry. I wanted these guys, right? And then I'm like, I'll be fine with getting into the third round and just go ahead and reaching for Malik Nabers, right? That was kind of the big part at the very beginning. And then what happened was, you know, through the course of the draft season, I tweaked it to where there were just the pockets of guys that I really liked, right? Whenever I look at the pockets of guys I really like right now, if I can't get Saquon Barkley, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, one of those three at the beginning of a best ball draft at value, I'm just basically, maybe I'll want to get some Ashton Jeanty, but this year I'm out on the Derrick Henrys and the Achans and, you know, Josh Jacobs, Breece Hall, Kyren Williams, even maybe like Chase Brown, all that. I'm forgoing those guys.
You're out on Breece Hall?
Yes.
What?
I'm out.
I'm trading for Breece Hall in Dynasty.
I think Dynasty could be different, Matt. I think
he's at least guy. He's gonna have a new team at the earliest this year, at the latest next year.
That's a good point. So obviously, with the whole new team dynamic, this is different for best ball than it is for Dynasty. I think Aaron Glenn's going to go in there, and he's not an offensive minded coach that understands the nuances of everything. And he's going to say, I saw what my old offensive coordinator had with that Sonic and Knuckles thing with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, and I'm going to do that with Braylon Allen and Breece Hall, and I think it might bite into his opportunity share. But so that's just one reason. Another reason was, man, like I was a little bit kind of taken aback last year by Breece Hall. He did not always pass the eyeball test to me last season, the way that he did to start his career. But regardless, whenever like guys like Breece Hall are going, I want to come out of these drafts with guys like Malik Nabers and like Brian Thomas or Drake London or Jackson Smith and Jigba, or, you know, when guys are taking the Josh Jacobs of the world, I want to get like McLaurin or like you know what I mean. And then this way,
you know, my favorite drafts that I've seen are the people drafting at the 110-201.
Yeah.
In the flex four game, getting Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas back.
Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly right. So cool.
That's exactly right. You can do that. And then Matt, here's the thing too, is you can do that basically four times, and you get down to the kind of area where I like, say, like Devontae Adams this year, right? But you don't have to like him. But you could take a choice between like the Devontae Adams, or, you know, you could take another stab on Marvin Harrison, which I don't think is bad right now. DJ Moore, this kind of stuff, his first year in a Ben Johnson offense, all the way down here to like the Devontae Smiths. And then that's when you can pivot and you can say, all right, now guess what? Fifth round, Omarion Hampton's coming to my team. He's going to be a stud, and he's going to take somebody's job. And now I'm getting him in the fifth round. And then guess what? I'm going to keep on moving down and moving down and moving down. And I'm filling up quarterback. I'm doing some of these other things. And guess what? We get to this area where people are starting now to maybe, after guys who I really like this year, where are you on Ricky Pearsall? Because I'm in on Pearsall. I'm in on like guys like Cortland Sutton, this type of player. I'm back in on Godwin. And so once I get past those guys to get like my wide receiver five, I'm like, bam, bam, give me Travion Henderson, give me Quinshon Judkins, this type of thing. They're going to take over starting running back jobs. They're just going to. And I've always been one of these guys that wants to get my running backs good and early. But if I'm just going out and I'm screaming it from the rooftops that this is a historic running back class, and this is a slate of running back veterans, and we can even go through this, Matt, if you want to, but Cody and I did it the other day, just trying to rank these backfields via who's going to just get nuked. It's tough to even rank and put in order how bad some of these incumbents are in some of these spots. Matt, people are going to get absolute nuclear bombs dropped on them by this running back class.
Yes.
The Denver Broncos, the Cleveland Browns, the Las Vegas Raiders, the New England Patriots, the Washington Commanders. Brian Robinson's going to get nuked. The Bears are going to get nuked.
Yes, Brian Robinson and Ramondre Stevenson are very, very, very vulnerable. And Ricky Pearsall is my number one trade target in Dynasty at wide receiver.
Oh, so you're in on Pearsall. I love it.
I mean, the two players I've talked the most about this week as trade targets are Ricky Pearsall at wide receiver and Breece Hall at running back.
Well, yeah, I think you and I are right on board with – so I didn't – the only part of the show I listened to yesterday – I'll go back and listen, but I just I usually always listen to Sonic Truth, but Cody told me about the part about Theo, so I just wanted to go listen to that and didn't listen to the rest. But I'll listen back later for your Breece Hall stuff, but just give me your give me your Breece Hall and Ricky Pearsall stuff. Like, what is it? What's your theories here?
Breece Hall, I mean, he is a target earner, one of the most efficient players, commanding targets, and then actually rolling up yards after the catch out of the backfield, and he can run routes. Like, his target depth is one of the highest in the league among running backs. Like, he's just a fantastic receiver, an elite receiver. But he also has the speed and the explosiveness to slash through the middle, slash outside, get outside, turn the corner. He can do it all. And for whatever reason, the Jets have misdiagnosed and had a massive failure of self-scouting. He is going to end up on a new team as early as this year, because I think it's very possible that the Jets replace him in the draft, or at least draft yet more running back competition. At its very worst, they could draft Jenty, because I could see Las Vegas passing on a running back, because they've been making so many smart decisions in Las Vegas that I could absolutely see them being like, no, we're not falling for it. Right, we're not doing it. We're not going to be the Dallas Cowboys drafting Ezekiel Elliott.
Is that just Brady? Is it Brady?
Something is happening there. Something has changed dramatically. Where you look up and they just keep making savvy front office move after savvy front office move, and you're like, oh, wait a second, this team is tracking right. And I think it's just so funny that in each conference, the two teams that have turned their front office decision making around the most were formerly driven into the ground by a Gruden. So you have Washington, you know, and you have Las Vegas, that they're coming up. Like, you're going to see Las Vegas in the playoffs in the next couple of years. And Washington is a Super Bowl contender now. And so you could absolutely see Las Vegas not drafting a running back. The Jets, because they're the Jets, drafting Jenty and their crowd going wild. You remember the guy? They used to have the guy with the firefighter hat.
Oh, yeah. Fireman Ed.
Fireman Ed's going crazy. Loves that pick. You know Fireman Ed loves that pick. So they're going to make the pick for Fireman Ed. And then immediately Washington's going to get on the phone and get Breece Hall. So now you put Breece Hall on Washington.
Oh.
And he could be the best running back in fantasy in that offense. And because he's going to benefit from the Alfred Morris corollary, because Alfred Morris was the first running back to enjoy that corollary with RG3. He's the namesake. And then you're back in Washington with the Alfred Morris corollary. It's just so perfect. That's best case scenario. Worst case scenario is he's still in New York, putting up 14, 15 fantasy points a game, as he always does. And then he goes to a team that wants him next year and appreciates him next year. So he's still young. So I think the case for Breece Hall is very clear. And I think you know that it's the time to buy, according to Theo, because of all the junk offers he's getting for Breece Hall. So that's why he's trying to buy. And then with Ricky Pearsall, it's just the most clear and obvious second year breakout to me, especially when you look at the game log. There's one guy I'm game log watching from last year, and that is Ricky Pearsall, because I don't care about early when he was rehabbing a bullet wound. As soon as he was any semblance of healthy, even though he didn't get ramped up in camp, he's out here making plays, squeezing the football, spectacular catches, making people miss. I mean, doing every, I mean, those last few games, man, he looked like a professional seasoned wide receiver out there. I was like, is this Justin Jefferson or Ricky Pearsall?
It was the Detroit game, right? That was the week 17. That was the best ball kind of finale, right? That was
everybody was good.
Nobody stacked Pearsall. He goes 10 targets, 8 catches for 141 and one touchdown.
It was a symphony. It was a symphony of football excellence. And that's the window into what he can be. And that's part of the reason why they're like, yeah, we're going to let Debo go. We're actually not
He's a
even
first round pick. He's a first round pick. You feel like you forget. It's not like, hey, gosh, I guess we're gonna have to get this guy. Dude, we spent a first round pick on him.
You're worried about targets because of Juwan Jennings, whose best skill is blocking. Shut up. Shut up about Juwan Jennings. Juwan Jennings is fine. Juwan Jennings exceeds all expectations I ever had for a guy that is just not that athletic, and yet he found a role in the league as an outside clasher, squeezing the football in contested situations. He earned that role, but he is not a dynamic playmaker in the way that Ricky Pearsall is. Ricky Pearsall is the heir apparent, and Ricky Pearsall could also get Brandon Ayuk traded.
And even if Brandon Ayuk doesn't get traded, I think so. Kyle Juszczyk came back to the 49ers, right? I think they cut him and then he came back. Let me make sure about that. But I'm 99% sure, because the point has to do with how the wide receivers are used here with Juszczyk in versus Juszczyk out, right? So he did rejoin them yesterday. Kyle Juszczyk sends a 5-word message about rejoining the San Francisco 49ers. So I'm not sure what the 5 words were, but I did see the headline. Okay, all right. So they would ask Kyle Shanahan at some of these post game availabilities when Juwan Jennings would have these big games, and they would say like, "Man, Juwan Jennings just had a monster. He's been having these big games. Like, why isn't he on the field more?" And he's like, "Well, what you guys don't understand is like, if I have Juwan Jennings in the game, I can't have Kyle in the game. And you might not see it, but Kyle is very essential to what we, you know, to our play to play operation and how we run our whole scheme. And it might not be in super duper obvious ways because, you know, he's a fullback and it's kind of hard to tell, but it really is important to what we do. And so, on those plays, just because of the way that the personnel groupings work, Juwan Jennings usually isn't in on those sets, right? And so I was thinking whenever it looked like the Juszczyk was getting cut loose, I was like, oh, well, maybe I always remembered Shanahan's kind of saying this stuff. Maybe that'll mean more Juwan Jennings this year, but now it looks like Juszczyk is coming back. So I don't even have that argument anymore.
So that was one of the maybe most useless stories anyone's ever told on this show.
You
went through this whole thought process that was very well articulated, very sound argument. You were making an argument for a hypothetical scenario that never happened.
No, it did happen.
He came back. You would go through and all that time that you're asking the audience to stick with
Are you saying that we should just act like it never happened?
You're essentially victory lapping a thought process that you had that has since been nullified.
No, it's not. It's just been nullified. Well, I guess if you want to put it like that, I guess you can. I think it's a neat anecdote.
It's happening. It's just we have some questions in the chat about Fast Draft, which I'm here for, very much here for. So someone said, I'm in Ontario. What do I do? Good news for people in Ontario soon in Ontario, maybe not in Ontario yet. But if you're in a state where they have not yet allowed fantasy, we have a free-to-play game. Soon, people in Ontario can play the free-to-play game very soon. We're working on that. So stay tuned. Follow at Fast Draft app. Follow at Fast Draft app on Twitter X so you can get updates on, you know, when the free-to-play game is going to be available in Ontario. We're going to have all the games available in the non-Ontario provinces very soon. We love Canada. I'm a big Canada fan. By the way, we talked earlier, go come full circle. Remember we talked about Northern Maine?
Yeah.
My wife to this day brings this up because she just can't believe it. In school, we used to sing both national anthems.
No.
Yes. Yes.
Dude, I'm closer to the Mexican border than you were to the Maine border, and there's no way. Like, I don't even know what the Mexican national anthem is.
Oh, Canada, my home and native land. She can't believe it. I was like, yeah, we used to sing both. We used to have both flags. We had both flags on buildings. Because there's been this longstanding partnership between the two, the state of Maine and Canada. There was a war fought over the border of Northern Maine.
Really?
Yes.
That was separate from the American Revolution?
I think that they were. It was a part of the. I think that no, it was one of the wars. It might have been the War of 1812. There was a war. There were battles fought in Northern Maine about the border of Maine. It might have been the Revolutionary War. It might have been the war. I don't know exactly which war it was, but there was battles. There were battles fought, and at one point the border of Maine was higher, and then at one point it was lower, and then eventually they decided on a border in the middle. It's like the St. John's River. I went to school with loggers, lots of people with like French last names, a lot of people with Canadian heritage I went to school with. Northern Maine is a very interesting, unique area of the country. I love Canada. Okay. I just want to make sure people know I love Canada. I love Canada. I love woodsmen. I love fishermen. I love farmers. And I love fantasy football.
Agreed.
That's why we're friends. Hunters, fishermen. I'm all about it. I'm all about it. And Canada. I love Canada. That's why I'm pushing very hard to get our free to play game up and running in Ontario and all our games in the other provinces. Provinces like, I don't know, Nova Scotia. Provinces like New Brunswick. Places that I know and love and appreciate. I love you, Canada. I also, I see our audience numbers, and Canada loves us. I love Canada. Canada loves us. So we're gonna come through for you, everybody. We already have a contest that is uniquely positioned to serve a particular audience, the IDP game. So we have the all defense game. Some background info for you just to educate everybody on what this is all about. Yes, it's designed to really be the place that the unification of IDP is scoring and where everyone can go to play. And it's been great. It's been a great thing. But beyond that, I think that this D-up game that we have on Fast Draft is something that everyone can play because you just need to know the top two defenders on every team. And most people know that. And they want to get that sweat on both sides of the ball. So here's a little more about it. I am proud to announce that Fast Draft now has an all-defense game called D-Up. That's right, fans of IDP finally have a real money best ball game that they can play. No more manually setting up leagues every time you want to do a draft. No. Now you can play for 10 grand, 2,000 to first. Could draft up to 30 teams, all defense. And the best part? Balanced scoring. Tackles for loss. Pass breakups. It all factors in. Just draft 6 defensive players, top 4 into your lineup every week. It's that easy. It's so easy that this isn't just for IDP people. If you love the NFL, then you'll love this game. And for the first time with Fast Draft, you can sweat both sides of the ball on Sunday. So use your host's promo code to get a $25 deposit match, and you'll love this D-Up contest because it's about time we got one. We, as if I'm a big IDP guy, we. And the promo code's now different. We have promo code KINGS for this show, and it gets you a $50 deposit match.
No, how about that?
50.
It must feel $50. Cool, Matt, to have all those terms and conditions there that you hear from all these big like sports books and stuff where you got to dial 1-800-999-HOPE-NY in New York or all that. Do you have to say all that stuff?
No, it's it, for, there's a disclaimer across the top. Did you see that? It has all that.
So you don't have to say it. You can just put it on.
Well, I could if I needed to. I can talk very fast. I could do some of those fast libraries if I need to do that. If I need to go, I can do that.
Some of them are very, very long. Some of them are very, very long.
I can do it though.
All right. Well,
if I had to, I'd do it.
At least you're prepared in case it needs to happen.
In case it comes up. So, a quick question for you. Yeah, I'll stop now. So Cody and I had a debate. I'm sorry. This is addicting. So I took the L on the Sonic Truth podcast, where Cody said Jordan Mason's a strong buy in Dynasty, and then I laughed in his face, and after much deliberation, apologized and took the L. I thought it would be obvious. I thought it was a no-brainer. Turns out these guys are adjacent on Keep Trade Cut, much to my chagrin. I thought it was clear you would be trying to trade for Isaac Garendo. But no. Actually, Jordan Mason may be the better bet. I did not appreciate the difference in draft picks, that the 49ers have the most draft picks of any team, and the Vikings have the least draft picks of any team. And that means there's a heck of a lot more opportunities. There's a lot more cards in the deck that can hurt Garendo and even McCaffrey than can hurt Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason. So for that reason, Cody believes Jordan Mason is relatively safe and Garendo is very much at risk. What do you think?
Dude, have you looked? I mean, San Francisco has – all right, so these are the picks in the top four rounds, right? Prime running back territory, right? 11, 43, 75, 99, 112, 138, and 139. I mean, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 picks in the – 8 picks during prime. I'd say prime running back territory actually would start at 43, right? And – You have to think to yourself, yeah, Garendo was good last year whenever McCaffrey was out and Mason was out and all the rest of it. And, you know, now you have Mason gone. You have Elijah Mitchell gone. It's pretty wide open. And that's long been one of the ultimate just, you know, one of those kind of monopoly spots you just kind of want to park on and just hope that you get the – you know what I'm saying? Like, hope you get the injury. So there's that, but there's also
but what Cody is saying is that watch Shanahan draft a running back on day two. They have so many supplemental picks too. A lot of these picks are coming from supplemental picks at the bottom of the round, but they could draft a running back at the bottom of the round, and a running back you think is going to make it to day three actually gets picked at the end of day two and goes to San Francisco with like pick 99. They could get R.J. Harvey at pick 99. They could get Bashal Tutin at pick 99. This is what Cody is saying. And that would certainly drop an anvil on Garendo, but it would also siphon a few touches away from even McCaffrey.
There's a possibility. Yeah, for sure. And like you mentioned, it's like you look at Atlanta with only the 4 picks, Minnesota with only the 4 picks. Just goes to show how we talked about the backfields that aren't safe. How safe is Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier when Atlanta's got 4 picks in this draft? My goodness. But yeah, dude, I don't think that you go out and you sign Aaron Jones to 2 more years and bring in a guy like Jordan Mason who like league winner Jordan Mason from last year. Now he didn't win you down the stretch, but he got you off to a super fast start. He was a guy that in DFS we were having to pay up what $7,500, $8K for this guy on a weekly basis just because of his usage was so elite by the end of it. What is he 25 now? 25
pick 138, pick 139, San Francisco 49ers. It I take it all back. Gunendo is a very risky pick. It's still an upside move. If you can get him inexpensively in Dynasty, absolutely do it. Right? Christian McCaffrey has the highest risk of injury of any running back in the league. And if they do end up using pick 138, 139, end of the fourth round, that's not the end of the world for Gunendo. Gunendo's still the veteran. He has the experience. He has the seasoning. So it's not, it's still a very sound move to trade for Gunendo, but it's not the smash over Mason that I thought it was. So I just wanted to, retake the L, because that's now what I'm, and now I'm just, I'm a masochist. I just love taking these L's now. Please, by all means, if you have great fantasy analysis, like a Cody Carpentier, like a Jax Falcone, Theo Graminger, Alex Dunlap, come on the show, feed me L's. I'm hungry. I'll take them. Alex, we did great. We did great work here. I can't believe the time flies on the show. Take us out with a hot take.
With a hot take. I don't care that Cam Scatabu ran a what's going to be adjusted to a 4.7. He's still going to end up being a top five back in this unbelievable class.
You're wrong.